This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Mike and Scott. You can find us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast. In 2009, Emily Brooks was newly married and eager to start a family. Then her dad was diagnosed with Huntington's disease. Huntington's is a cruel genetic disorder that kills brain cells. Symptoms can start when people are in their 30s or 40s. Over time, it robs them of the ability to walk, talk, and think. It's caused by a mutation in just one gene, and if you carry that mutation, you have a 50-50 chance of passing it on. So Emily's family started talking about testing. Her brother didn't want to know. Her sister tested negative, no Huntington's. And Emily?
I tested positive in 2011. My mom cried for a long time, even my dad. My mom still cries about it.
When you have this mutation, it's almost definite that you will eventually get Huntington's. So Emily was facing her own future illness, and she was thinking about kids.
Emily always knew she wanted to be a mom and that she wanted to be pregnant at least once. But she also knew with certainty that she didn't want to pass Huntington's on to her kids. And she found out she had options.
Irina Zhuroff visited Emily Brooks in North Alabama right around Christmas time.
When I arrive at the Brooks house, the living room is already littered with open gifts. Construction sets, Legos, toy trucks, Nash and Tate, four-year-old twins, are wielding swords.
Do you guys close in the door? With your
sword? Oh, yes. I battle with everything. They're each other's best friends and worst enemies, all in the same time.
Their mom, Emily, says Nash is a little taller, bossier, gets in trouble at school.
And he pinches and bites and kicks and screams.
Tate is gentler, a people pleaser.
He loves to play, plays well with others, just a very easygoing child. They're very good balance.
Most importantly, they're both healthy.
So if, as long as I know they don't have Huntington's, then, you know, they're from there on, it's just the luck of the draw as it is with everybody.
Before Emily got pregnant, her doctor suggested a test that almost guarantees the disease would end with her and her family. Researchers first performed those kinds of tests in 1990, and the technology has evolved rapidly since then. It starts with in vitro fertilization, or IVF. In IVF, doctors combine male sperm with female eggs in a laboratory. After an embryo forms and grows for 5 days, they place it into the woman's uterus. But in Emily's case, doctors first screened the embryo's genetics. Dr. Anuja Dokras, a fertility expert at the University of Pennsylvania, explains that a technician uses a laser to make a small hole in the shell of the embryo.
And then we have another instrument that goes through that hole and will just gradually suck out a few cells, which are from that layer known, you know, that would eventually become the placenta.
Technicians take 5 to 6 cells out of the approximately 100 that make up the 5-day embryo.
If you gave a sample of blood for genetic testing, that's like 1 million cells. So there's just no comparison in the magnitude.
The cells are sent to a special lab that can work at that scale. Because there's so little genetic material in those few cells, the first thing the lab does is replicate the DNA, so they have more of the stuff to work with. At the lab, staff can check the embryo for the proper number of chromosomes, which, when incorrect, can cause conditions like Down syndrome, Edwards syndrome, or Patau syndrome. They can also take an even closer look at specific gene mutations.
And it's usually lethal or very much associated with disabilities, chronic illness, where they don't want to have another child with the same conditions. They've had deaths in the family with those conditions.
The lab finds the gene mutation on the chromosome and checks whether the embryo inherited the bad gene from the mother or the father. They can tell that by examining the DNA sequences around the gene, a marker that's inherited alongside the gene. If you know who's got the bad gene to begin with, it's possible to trace the lineage and figure out if the embryo carries a normal one or not. Labs can now test for more than 6,000 genetic conditions like cystic fibrosis, spinal muscular atrophy, and Huntington's.
But the limitation is we don't have a gene for everything. We don't have a gene for diabetes. We don't have a gene for autism. There are so many of these controversial conditions people do want to avoid in the next generation, but we can't offer that because we don't know what the, we need a single gene that's associated with it, not a complex condition.
The tests sound like a great option for families like Emily's, right? Well, like any other biomedical technology, it brings up some ethical questions. In the U.S., there are no legal restrictions on using such screening to choose the sex of the embryo. Some believe that could enable sex preference in families. Even the ethics committee of the medical society that oversees the industry couldn't come to a consensus on whether clinics should offer the service. That's unusual. Clinics can make their own decisions on that. For Judith Darr, who chairs the ethics committee at the American Society for Reproductive Medicine, a bigger issue is access. Insurance often does not cover IVF or the genetic testing, which together can cost around $20,000 per cycle.
Families that have a pedigree of genetic disorders that can be quite devastating, that want to avoid the birth of a child with that disorder, who don't have insurance for IVF, may not be able to do so.
For Emily Brooks and her husband in Alabama, it meant financial help from their parents and taking on loans.
People always ask, when are you going to have more kids? Like, when we pay these two off, which is kind of a joke, but it's kind of not.
Doctors took 17 eggs from Emily and tested 14 of the embryos that formed.
9 or 10 were positive for Huntington's. And then the others, we had 4 that were good. So of the 4, we put 2 in. We did a fresh transfer and we put 2 in. And now we have Nash and Tate.
After the birth of the twins, Emily had tubal ligation, so she won't have any more kids without another medical intervention. The process wasn't without heartbreak for the family. They missed the giddiness many parents experience in discovering a natural pregnancy. They didn't have as much guesswork. They also, as devout Christians who oppose abortion, struggled with the loss of all those other embryos.
My whole family's very religious, but I just chose my kids' well-being for mine, I guess, my spiritual well-being. So that's okay.
They donated the remaining embryos to science. Meanwhile, the Holbrooks family participates in studies for Huntington's, and Emily takes an antidepressant to help her cope with her always looming diagnosis. She sees her dad declining and knows she'll follow a similar course.
I try to have extra patience with my dad so that somebody will pay me that patience one day when I'm in that situation.
But she says she doesn't regret doing things this way.
It was a very, very good decision for our case and for our family and for my kids and their future. So at least I know that their future, mine may not be as bright, but theirs can be. And so I just have to focus on the good times that I have and, you know, try not to dwell on what we don't know. So, and hopefully they'll come up with a cure soon. Hopefully.